So the year is 1987. The Cold War is ending, and it's not relevant to this conversation. There was a particularly, handsome and talented six-year-old growing up in Indianapolis, Indiana. And that's true, but not relevant to this conversation. As the Cold War is ending, though, those of you who are not familiar with the Cold War, it was a time where there was not a lot of activity, but outwardly, but a lot of tension and fear related to this tension that the U.S. experienced with Russia. And the Cold War went on for years. And, you know, it represented this fear of espionage. It represented this fear of nuclear war. And so you had people doing things like making bunkers in their backyard. And then around 1987, 88, 89, the Cold War ended. And so you have this season of transition globally, where the way that the world functioned, the way that relationships worked, our country interacted with other countries, the way that the economics were shifting and changing rapidly, the war college, where Army creates senior officers, was looking for a term, trying to understand what's going on in our world, like what is happening, what does this sort of new season look like where change is happening constantly and we're not really sure where it's going to end up. And they came up with this word VUCA, V-U-C-A, and VUCA represents volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. And this volatility means that the world was changing very, very fast. The uncertainty means that it was changing so fast, you didn't really have a grasp or understand what your present world looked like. You didn't know if what you thought of the world was accurate or not, because it was changing so quickly. The complexity represents that there was not just one aspect of life that was changing and growing, but all areas of life were sort of like in transition. It was very, very complex. And then ambiguity, you didn't know where it was going to end up. You didn't know when the changing was going to stop. You didn't know when the carousel was going to slow down. You just knew that the world was shifting and changing and volatile and uncertain and complex and ambiguous. And so they came up with this word, VUCA, which represented how the world exists when the whole world is changing kind of all at once. And for 10 years, it was stayed only solely a military term. And then around 2000, it was adopted by the business world because of the internet age. And there were some very large companies that became large fast. And they were changing economics. They were changing information. They were changing globalization, making this very, very large world feel much smaller because of the internet. And companies like Yahoo and Google and eBay were changing the world almost overnight. And businesses began to use this term, this VUCA, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, as the world is shifting and changing. And it felt like the world was changing faster than people could adjust to, and so they were always behind the changes. Sociologists believe that we're experiencing a season of VUCA now, and perhaps of our most intense ever. This idea that our world is shifting and changing and it's volatile and uncertain and complex and ambiguous. And you look at all the things that are changing our world now. Gender is becoming less binary. We used to have the internet that was based on information. It's largely based on opinion now. Feels like a constant threat of terror, uncertain economics, a general decline of impartial information and news, and a burgeoning outrage culture where it feels like someone's always outraged about something. And so sociologists believe that we're in this sort of season of VUCA once again, that across the board, what people are living with and feeling like is a sense of volatility and uncertainty and complexity and ambiguity. And I'll be honest with you, like I sense this in the world, where it feels like the world is spinning and shifting and changing faster than we can get we kind of come to grips with it, and when the time you come to grips with it, it's already changed more again. And so it creates this feeling of tension and unrest in our world today. And what happens in seasons of VUCA, this volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, is you look for like anything that's going to make you feel comfortable and normal, and like you can rest at ease at night. You just like, oh man, I just need to sense some sense of stability. And so oftentimes what happens is people, they will find their tribe, the people who look like them and act like them and believe like them, and they will just like, man, if you believe this way and you believe this way and I believe this way, we can't all be wrong, so let's just bunker down here together. Sort of like that bunker you saw earlier, only maybe it's sociologically. And then when you bunker down and you find people who look like you and act like you and believe like you, then you have to sort of see the differences in the people across. Oh, they don't look like me. They don't live like me. They don't believe like me. And so it becomes us versus them. It feels very dual. Well, actually what happens in seasons of VUCA is there's this term. It's the terror management theory. And this is how leaders and communicators will communicate in seasons of unrest, of this VUCA. And there are certain words that if communicators use them in like public communication platforms, it makes people's brains light up more actively. It aligns people to themselves more effectively than when they use these terms at other times. These terms, this terror management theory, theory of communication during seasons of unrest, the powerful words that align people to your way of thought are hurt, danger, peril, injure, sick, threat, and terrorist. And when you hear these words in seasons of like unrest, it's like, okay, this person knows how this person knows what I'm going through. They know how I feel. I'm going to align with that person. And actually, you saw it. Politically speaking, politicians understand this. They build their speeches at certain times around this. The last presidential election, I'm going to give you a quote from both of the major presidential nominees. One said, "The attacks on our police and the terrorism in our cities threaten our very way of life. Many have seen the recent images of violence in our streets personally. Some have even been its victims." The other nominee said this, "I'm the last thing standing between you and the apocalypse." We have come a long way since Franklin Roosevelt said, "There's nothing to fear but fear itself." We've come a long way since the Bible, 365 times. That, if you're following along at home, that's once for every day of the year. Fear not. So what do? If we live in this world that feels like it's on uneven sand and the sand is giving way beneath our feet, and you're constantly with this sense of fear and overwhelmed and uncertain, like how do you live? How do you not sort of like define yourself by who and what you're against in these seasons like this? I would say we look to Jesus, because Jesus lived in uncertain times. Jesus lived in times when there was opposition politically, opposition relationally. That Jesus lived in times that were uncertain, that were ambiguous, that were complex, that were volatile. I mean, he lived in a country that was occupied by another country. He understands the sense of like of what it feels like to live today. And he spoke to it. He spoke to it in Matthew 5. In Matthew 5, verse 38 through 41. And in Matthew 5, 38 through 41, this is what Jesus is talking about in terms of like, man, I feel like I have two options right now. I could either go fight or I could flight. I could attack or I could avoid. And Jesus speaks to this. He speaks to it and he says, I'm neither going to call you to attack or avoid, to fight or to flight. But there has to be some sort of other way, some transcendent way to respond. We don't have to side up. We have to choose a side and be oppositional to someone. We don't have to pick this way or that way. There has to be a third way that we can go. And so Jesus in Matthew 5, 38 through 41 says this, because you have heard the law that says the punishment must match the injury, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. If you are sued in court and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat too. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. And it starts out, he says this thing. He says, an eye for an eye. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye. And actually, this is a reference to the Code of Hammurabi, which is this code by this Babylonian ruler from 1700 years before Jesus. And in this Code of Hammurabi, it says an eye for an eye. It says that, man, if someone hurts your eye, then you have the right to hurt their eye. And this is how we interact with people and things escalate. Like if someone hurts my eye and then I hurt their eye and then they come back at me and I come back at them and it's this back and forth, it's this vengeance, it's this thing of like attack and attack and attack and attack. But Jesus says, no, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But that's not what I'm asking you for. That's not what the way of Jesus looks like and sounds like and feels like. We're not looking for vengeance. We're looking for something else. And then he goes into it like kind of verse by verse. And in verse 39, it says this, But I say, do not resist an evil person. And actually, what's fascinating there is that this word resist is this word antistenai. This word antistenai. And it means resist. But actually, antistenai, anti, against, stenai means to stand. And it means to stand against. Do not stand against an evil person. You're like, what? I don't even know what do you mean stand against. Actually, it's a military term for back when there was like close hand-to-hand combat, and you had this side, this army and this army, and they would march towards each other, and then they would battle, and they would stand against one another. In this sort of like mode of combat, this I'm moving towards you, and I'm going to stand against your forces. This was a military term of combat style. And so this idea of like do not resist, it's like this, do not go to war, do not go to combat with an evil person. What's funny though is it doesn't say evil. It says evil person. Do not go to battle against the evil person. It's as if Jesus is saying, no, don't go to battle against the evil person, but always go to battle against evil. Like, don't go to war, don't hold up your dukes, don't go into battle, and don't feel like you have to run away either. Like don't resist, don't fight, don't get to go to war with that evil person, but always stand against evil. Because he keeps going, he says, do not resist that evil person. And then verse 39 says this, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. All right, Jeff, come here a second. I've been waiting for this moment for a long time. All right, so anyway, so turn this way. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so it says very, sometimes when you're reading the Bible, you have to pay attention to the details. Because what it says, if someone slaps you on the right cheek. And so if I'm going to face Jeff, and I've been dreaming of this moment for a long time, no, I'm just kidding. And I'm going to have impact on his right cheek. It's very hard. I have to like punch across my body to get his right cheek. And so what are my options? My options are backhand or my left hand, right? Because it says very clearly right cheek. Well, a backhand, that's disrespect. I mean, if I'm trying to go to fight, I mean, he's a strong guy. If I want to backhand him in a fight, it's not... I better run. I'm either in a fight or flight because I'm not going to win a fight with Jeff that way, right? And so I'm not going to win a fight backhanding. And the left-hand option, I don't want to go too far down this road, but the left hand in their culture, it was like a bathroom hand. I don't want to just, okay? And so that was what you use in the bathroom. And so if you would never do this in their culture, that's, right, because that's an insult. And so for me to either say I'm going to, on his right cheek, I'm either going to have to backhand or left hand. What I'm saying is I am dehumanizing, degrading someone if I slap them on their right cheek. And so what does he say? If someone slaps you on your right cheek, if someone dehumanizes you, if someone devalues you, offer the other cheek also. But what do we say? We want to fight or flight. If someone slaps me on my right cheek, am I going to put my dukes up or am I going to run away? It's fight or flight, right? It's this way or that way. He says, no, 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 no. Offer the other cheek. And so, okay, so if I'm facing and I've just left hand slapped, if I've bathroom slapped him, right? And he turns his cheek to me. I'm not fighting and I'm not running. But you can't backhand slap me anymore. If you're going to hit me again, you're going to do it with a fist because I'm your equal. Thank you, Jeff. I feel like I missed an opportunity there. And so what you have, it's this third way. It's this, I'm not going to go to battle with you. I'm not going to fight you, but I'm not going to let you devalue and dehumanize me either. I'm going to communicate strength, but I'm not going to communicate vengeance. It's this whole other way. It's transcending the argument. We keep going in this passage. In verse 40, it says, if you are sued in court and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat too. The first thing you have to notice here is that, so if you're hand-to-hand combat with someone or if someone slaps you, they're like close quarters with you. They're no more than an arm's length away. But as you go through this passage, it gets concentric circles further and further out. And this is a reference to, in Jewish culture, in Jewish law, if someone owed someone else, another Jewish person, money, a large sum of money, and they couldn't pay it back, you could ask for someone's shirt, but you couldn't take their coat. Because then, if you took their shirt and their coat, they'd walk out of the courtroom with no shirt on, and that's not dignified, right? And so you could say you couldn't take their coat, but you could literally sue them for their shirt, the shirt off their back. But if you are someone who's loaning money out, and you have enough money that you can pay your own bills and loan money to other people, then you're someone who's getting by comfortably. And then if you're getting by comfortably and you sue someone for their shirt, do you need that shirt? No, you don't need that shirt. What are you doing? You're making a stand. You're like, you're holding their feet against the fire. But these Jewish people, they're living in this Roman-occupied country. And so none of these people feel like they have power. All of them are oppressed and marginalized and abused by the Roman soldiers in their homes, in their towns, in their squares, telling them what to do, ordering them, abusing them. And so what you have here is you have one Jewish person who is suing this Jewish person because this person has and this person has not, and they're taking their power back that the Roman soldiers took from them on the back, literally, of this person. And what do you have? I have more than I need, but I'm going to sue you for the shirt off your back, literally, because you owe me money, and I'm going to feel powerful again. And if this happens to you, and if you owe someone money and they sue you for your shirt, you can run away. You can say, I'm not giving you my shirt. Like, that's ridiculous. You don't even need it. Or you can take your shirt off and take your coat off, too. I have a picture here of what Jewish sort of attire would have looked like. And so it's not really like a shirt. It would have said like coat and cloak originally, but you have like this outer coat thing and you have like this inner kind of like robe shirt thing. They didn't really wear shirts like we wear shirts. Like the shirt part is the inner part. And the coat part is this kind of outer kind of like, I don't know what you call that, window drapings? I don't know. But so if you take off the shirt part, and the coat part, you're not walking out wearing much. And so what are you doing? You're saying, man, if you need your power back, if you need my shirt, you can have my coat too. I'm not going to run away. I'm not going to fight against you. I'm not going to antistonize you. I'm not going to resist you. But I am going to transcend. Like, I'm not going to be weak. See, what happens if someone wants to take their power back from you? If they want to make themselves feel powerful and you have to pay for it, then they want you to be weak. They want you to be like, fine, you've beaten me. You want to be like, there's this breakfast food called milk toast. I've never had it. It sounds gross, but you take toast, you put it in milk, and it becomes soggy. They want you to be milk toast. They want you to be this soggy mass of defeated nothingness. But that's not what Jesus is calling us to. He's not saying be defeated. He's saying don't fight against the evil person, but resist evil. We keep reading in verse 41. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. And this was something that would happen, is if Roman soldiers had to go from one part of town or one town to another town, they could, because the Roman soldiers were occupying this Jerusalem, this Jewish country, then they could walk from town to town, walk from one side of town to the other, and they could say, you, whatever, whoever it is you are, you have to carry my pack, you have to carry my stuff, you have to carry all of my soldierly belongings with me for 1 mile. And actually, this was something that would happen periodically. We see it on Passion Week when Jesus fell and the Roman soldiers just pulled him out of the crowd and said, you carry Jesus' cross for him. We see examples of this in the Bible. And what you have here is Jesus saying, if someone who, you're getting further and further out in the concentric circles, by the way, it started with a person in front of you, then anyone who's like you, anyone in your tribe, anyone who is part of your countrymen, and now it's an obvious enemy, someone who you have no relation to. They're just abusing you. They're just taking advantage of you. And he's saying, if a soldier demands that you carry his gear for 1 mile, carry it 2 miles. Now, this is maybe you had plans. Maybe you're on your way to work. It just doesn't matter. Like, he just interrupts your day and says, you, carry my stuff. You can run away. You can try and fight him. Or you can carry it. And after a mile goes by, like, no, I got this. It's fine. Let's keep going. What is that? That's not fighting. It's not flighting. It's this transcendent third way. I got to be honest. I would say that the third way is not my natural bent. I don't know about you. Who would say their natural bent is fight? Who would say, oh, I know you're, I'm just kidding. Who would say their natural bent is flight? Right. And some of you are dishonest. Some of you didn't raise your hands at all. Because this is standing for right. It is aligning with justice, but it's not raising your fists. And it's not running either. It is this transcendent third way. And we live in this world that those are the only two options. Like, if you're not with us, you're my enemy. But what does Jesus say? Love your enemy. So there's no out. You just have to love. You just have to love everyone. There has to be this third way. It can't be fight or flight, attack or avoid. There has to be a third way in every situation. Like, we live in this world that wants to be this dualistic, like, either or option. There's us and there's them. There's my people and there's your people. There's people who look and act and believe like me, and there's everyone else. And me and my tribe were against them because we're right and they're wrong. And what does Jesus say? No, transcend that. There has to be a third way, a third option. And it's harder. It's much, much harder. See, if you're going to go the flight, avoid route, it feels passive. It feels powerless, like you're a pushover. And it reinforces what the evildoer wants. Like, they want you to feel powerful and have you pay for it. If you're going to go the fight, attack mode, you meet the evildoer on their ground. This isn't shalom. This isn't peace. This isn't the world how God created it to be. And revenge always escalates. If someone does wrong to you and you respond with wrong, then they're going to respond back to you. It's always going to build. It's always going to build. And you hear these things like love your enemy. And it feels like a bygone era. It feels like something we never see. Have you ever seen a Facebook war? Not third way. Not third way. All you're doing is both sides are getting more and more and more entrenched in their way, and no one's loving one another. If you don't think you see this in our world, you're just not looking close enough. Third way says, don't pursue power, pursue strength. Don't pursue revenge, but stand for justice. And two injustices don't make a justice. Don't pursue anger, pursue courage. Don't resist an evil person, but always resist evil. Real life, if your office mate cherishes love, if you're like the next, the chair over, the cubicle over, the desk over, that person loves talking about people when they're not around, don't go there. Refuse. Resist. Like, you can talk about them, man, that person always talking about people behind their back. Or you can be like, yeah, man, you know what, that person, they are crazy. They don't get it. You say, you know what, honestly, that person's, I like them, they're my friend. Can we talk about something else? You're transcending that. It's a third way. You see someone who lives, believes, and looks differently than you. Refuse to pigeonhole them as oppositional. If someone treats you without dignity, you can model. No one can make you operate and live without undignified. Live dignified. If someone treats you with disrespect, if you're at your job, if you work at a grocery store, and someone going through your line treats you badly, man, I feel like you're having a bad day, and I'm sorry for that. You're not fighting back at them, you're not resisting, you're not being a pushover, but you're acknowledging that they've treated you badly, and you're saying, I'm sensing you're having a bad day, and I'm sorry for that. It transcends this argument. If someone tries to take advantage of you, see if there's any if they need any additional help. If you have a social category of people you don't like, you don't trust, get to know those people. So choose this third way on social media. Choose that third way with your coworkers. Choose that third way in life. Choose the third way. This transcendent, I'm not going to fight. This is what Jesus calls us to, and this is what Jesus modeled. You see, no one modeled the third way more clearly and beautifully than Jesus did on the cross. You look at Luke 23, for instance. In Luke 23, 34, you have Jesus, and he's on the cross. And what's fascinating about this is Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing." And the soldiers gambled for his clothes by throwing dice. Let's just leave this up here for a second. Look at this. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing," while hanging on a cross with nails through his hands and his feet. I mean, he is dying a painful death on the cross for you and for me. And at this time, he's saying, "Forgive them." Meanwhile, at his feet, they're throwing dice so he could take his clothes home. And he's saying, "Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." This is Jesus we're talking about. He could have called angels down and got them off the cross. He could have gone to war. He could have just, "Woe is me. These people are terrible. They don't get it." No, he's actively forgiving in that moment. I mean, if there's a person at your office you can't get along with, and it's like, I'm not gonna forgive them. You don't know what they've done. Jesus from the cross says, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." And a couple verses later, in verse 46, it says this. Then Jesus shouted, "Father, I entrust my spirit into your hands." And with those words, he breathed his last. This is when Jesus died. The thing is, he wasn't murdered. They didn't kill him. And he didn't pull himself off the cross. He voluntarily gave up his life. He wasn't killed, and he didn't fight back. He chose a transcendent third way. What we're talking about here, do you guys feel it? Do you guys feel the unease, the unrest, the way our world functions today, the us versus them? Do you guys feel the tension between people who don't look alike and act alike and believe alike, where it's so divided? And you know what happens in times of VUCA is if anyone speaks confidently, it's like a balm to our soul. It's like, "Oh, you're confident and I feel unease. I'm going to align with you." And the easiest way is to say, "Those people are evil. Those people are wrong." And so what you have is you have like this, I feel unease. I feel unrest. And someone speaks confidently, and then it's like, "Oh, okay, yes, I will just align with you because that just feels better." Jesus calls us to love everyone, love our enemies. When there's conflict, he called us to choosing a third way. For the next couple weeks, we're going to unpack this. We're going to unpack what it means to live in a third way, to not be pigeoned into an either or, to not be pigeoned into fight or flight, attack and avoid, that the gospel calls us to something transcendent, that there is a way that feels obvious and easy, and the gospel calls us to something bigger, better, more transcendent than that, to transcend above that. As a community, if you have a world full of people who are fighting and flighting, and you have a community of people who transcend that sort of base level of how to interact with one another, there's nothing more attractive than that. There's nothing more attractional than that. If you want to be a community of people that calls people and aligns people to Jesus, then you choose the third way because that's hopeful. I talked about earlier this terror management theory and like the words that make people's brains light up in brain scans. You know what doesn't make people's brains light up? You know, the words purpose, patience, forgiveness, reconciliation, hope. But you know what does make people's brains light up? When they see those things play out. When they see people standing against evil. When they see people forgiving. When they see people working towards reconciliation and hope, who live life marked by hope. The words terror, threat, pain, and the actions hope, reconciliation, peace. So let us be a community of people with these actions. For the next few weeks, we're going to continue to unpack this, what this looks like, what this feels like in your day-to-day life. Hopefully, you come back as we enter in this conversation for the next few weeks. Let's close in prayer. Jesus, we want to do your words and your life and your choices justice. We want to be a people whose lives are marked by you, who are marked by the way that you live and the choices you made. And Jesus, you were literally on the cross, and you could have literally called down angels, and you could have ended this conflict in this moment. You could have just said, all right, I'm just going to accept this. And you chose the third way for us. And you call us to this, like this other way of approaching people in the world and life, which is not defined by who I'm against. If we're going to have an impact in our world, God, this is where it starts. Aligning with and standing for people who are different than us, who see the world different, who look different. You talk about in your word every nation, every tongue, every tribe. How much you love everyone equally. And yet we love and like and trust people who look like us a little more. And so we repent of that, God. And it's hard because life is volatile. It does feel uneasy. It's easy to fall into the habit of judging and categorizing. This is not what you called us to, and it's not what you modeled, it's not what you did. So we want to live like you, we want to be like you, we want to love our neighbor like you, and it starts here, God. So give us the courage and the wisdom it takes to choose a third way, not fight or flight, not attack or avoid. Let us be a grace-filled, reconciliation-filled, forgiveness-filled community. And model that, because you did. We love you and thank you. In your name, amen.